Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is there a chance that you just really like the LSU jersey? That you just really like watching?
I do love their jerseys. I love their unis. Their unis are definitely in the top five of college football.
Elite player immediately.
Oh, yeah. What's up, everybody? It's Chris Sims. It's Chris Sims on Button. Ahmed Farid is here. We are here not to talk about LSU jerseys. I do like them, right? I mean, they're special. It's a cool helmet. I like all of that type of stuff. Ahmed is in his usual hoodie. You're kind of a hoodie every show guy now. I mean, you become
that
guy, right?
Soon I'll
white
transition.
White hoodie with some red and blue on
it's
it. Are you America? Hoodie. Are you France? I mean, what are you here? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Pants I don't normally wear.
Still has a cold.
I
still infecting the world. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you, Ahmed.
I'm at the stage where I sound sicker than I am.
Oh, okay.
Right? It's
good.
Just like I
wake
up, I feel
fine. Yeah, you look
a little
bit better today. I could tell that for sure.
But it still sounds like I am.
Yeah, it's all right. You
I'm
still
infecting
sound like
everyone.
Shit, but don't worry. It's all right. All you have to do is talk into a microphone for a living.
so how have your last couple days been? Because I've seen you on the internet.
Yeah.
I've seen you blowing up on the internet.
I'm on the internet, right? But I'm not on the internet. Let me just tell you. I'm on social media, but
yes.
I'm not on social media, right?
I've heard people talking about you on the internet.
Right, right. I've learned to kind of just stay away from a little of the social media. And every now and then I look, right? I try to look at things not involved with me because I don't want to get worked up about it.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get in fights with people, right? I state myself very clearly here on this podcast and explain my thoughts into deep detail. I know not everybody's going to agree with me. I know that I'm not going to be right on all these. I get that. But, you know, the negativity on social media goes craziness.
That's bad.
And that's where, I'm not paying attention too much.
The Rocketeer 23 has a theory.
Yeah.
It is clear that Chris Sims got some money from LSU boosters to put this out there. Is that true? Have you been paid off?
No, I have not. No.
Although that, not a bad idea.
It is. Well, I think that goes on, right? Yeah. I don't think it goes on necessarily maybe with the schools themselves, but agents, making sure certain draft evaluators. Right?
Yeah.
Are you laughing there because I said agents by a second? Like, I know I didn't mean to say that. It was worth it. Look at this. I've never seen them lose it like this. Right? I was saying agents, not Asians.
I was like, why are you going to blame a whole population for this whole thing?
Asians like football too. Okay, we know that. But
very true.
Either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. The more with the agents trying to influence.
Yeah.
The people that are in the media,
sure.
The draft evaluators, all of that.
Well, if you're
certainly,
like a newsbreaker.
You know that can't happen with me.
If you're a newsbreaker,
right.
For sure. You're,
right.
Like, you're talking to agents all the time. And they're like, hey, I'm representing this guy, up and comer, Marvin Harrison. He's amazing. And all these teams are talking to him. You're going to put that out there. I thought about this a lot last night.
Okay, right.
And so I want to run this by you.
Yeah.
And I was running it by you a little bit. I mean, it really is. It's like copy and paste season right here. Which is amazing. You had the gall to put Marvin Harrison third instead of one, and your tweet got 8 million impressions, 1,000 replies.
I had the gall to put Justin Jefferson in front of Jerry Jeudy.
So here's my question. I was thinking about this. Like, if we did the same exercise with top NFL receivers, like say five of them. Say you got Tyreek, you got Jamar, you got Justin Jefferson, you got AJ Brown, you got CeeDee Lamb, you got those guys.
Right.
You could really make a compelling case for any one of those guys to be one, two, three, four, five.
Right.
And if you supported it well with facts, no one would really bat an eye. Be like, all right, you have Justin Jefferson one, I have him four, but we're all pretty cool about it.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this last night, and I think it's like the uncertainty and the variability in the NFL draft. You would think that people would have more variability.
It's but just it's like, actually see that even more concise.
Exactly.
Right?
And so
it's
crazy. I was like, what is happening?
We know
here?
The future for sure, and this is the way it is.
So this is what I thought. This conclusion, I came to this, and I wrote it down. I go, it's the unpredictability itself of the draft that herds experts and us fans both towards the warmth of agreement. All of us prefer to live in the comfortable fantasy that consensus might somehow remove the unpredictability from the process. So we all want to believe that our team is getting the top wide receiver when we take him number 3 overall.
Yeah, right.
But just because it is so unpredictable in the draft, what do you think of my theory there?
Well,
deep psychology theory.
No, I think there's some real truth to that, right? You know, I think groupthink can spread, and the scouting community, right? You know, the area scouts and all that. I think those are a lot of the guys that communicate with a lot of the TV draft experts, right? And they're a close-knit group, like I was telling you before this show. I mean, the scouting community and all of that, it's a small world, right? They all know each other.
And there's safety in numbers,
too. And there is safety in numbers as well, let alone, again, too, they're scouts, and they're not necessarily always all about, like, hey, X's and O's football. Wait, why did this happen? They're a little bit more on just, let me look at the specimen, right? Wait, this guy's this, and he's big, and the name, and the school, and
he's
safe, and the narrative, and all that. And I think that kind of plays into it. And then they can, oh, wait, look at what he's doing in a big game. He's got 100 yards against Michigan and blah, blah, blah. And it becomes, I think it takes a life of its own that way a little bit, right? And so I think there is some of that, right? But then, you know, like I always tell you, I think as you get deeper down the line, you start to get, again, now GMs and now the head coach and now the quarterback coach. They're getting involved in this, and they're going to give some different angles to these scouts or whatever else and go, well, wait, look at this play. Look at this. Well, he can't do this. He does this. He can't do that, blah, blah, blah. And the things change. And I think that's why, you know, again, one of my things in my world, and I said this to you before the pod too, right? When I have a list or a ranking that is like crazy, right? Like when I put Zach Wilson in front of Trevor Lawrence, which, you know, again, I liked him. I had some questions about Trevor Lawrence. I wasn't sure all the way, right? I was wrong. I know that. I was wrong. But like when I did that, I get lots of texts like, from people in the NFL. Like, you really think Zach Wilson's better than Trevor Lawrence? Why do you think this? What is it? Blah, blah, blah. What worries you, right? With this one right here, okay? And again, not saying I'm right or all this, but I do think with where my rankings are, it tells me a little, like, context clues that I'm not that far off. I did not get a lot of pushback from anybody in the NFL that was like, you're crazy. Malik Nabers won, right? You know, I didn't get any of that. And I didn't get anybody of like, whoa, right? So, and not even with the Brian Thomas Jr. thing either. So that's where that was the one I was expecting people to be like, man, whoa, you're putting Brian Thomas Jr. in front of Marvin Harrison Jr.? I didn't get pushback from that. And I got friends from all stretches of the NFL world.
That love to tell you when you're
scouts,
wrong.
Or they do. They love, or they love, we have constructive conversations, right? That's the good thing. Because like you said, you know, you can see things differently to a degree, right? There's no doubt about that. Now, like with your top five wide receivers in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
I think if we got into the top five wide receivers in the NFL, right, most of the high level, all the head coaches, the offensive coordinators, and I don't think anybody would not have Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and Tyreek Hill, right, not in their top five. That would be consensus, right, because it just jumps out. It's special. In fact, I would even say within that, Tyreek Hill would definitely be number one. And no matter who you talk to, defense, offense, whatever, Tyreek Hill puts the fear of God into everybody. Mm. And when people watch him, even other offensive coaches, when they're watching a defense and Miami's offense is playing, they just go, oh, my gosh, I can't believe what he can do, what he does for that offense. It's crazy, right? You hear everybody that plays the Dolphins, they go, well, it all starts with that guy number 10, right? I mean, right. And what he does. So the really good evaluators are going to see those things, and there's going to be more consensus. I don't think, like, in the NFL, and I'm going to make sure I make this point the right way, like, with the top five receivers, I don't think anybody's list would be all that egregiously different as far as the five names, right?
The five names.
The five names. The order of them is debatable.
But
certainly.
That's the special thing about
this
draft prospect.
Well, that's where it's
3-1, 1-3 creates 8 million impressions.
I know.
In the NFL, Justin Jefferson versus Tyreek Hill is like debatable.
It's debatable, right?
Worth dunking on someone like they're an idiot.
Exactly right. You know, I feel like this with like this conversation here and all that, where like, you know, Malik Nabers has the type of talent to be like the guys I'm talking about, top five superstar, all that type of stuff. Marvin Harrison Jr.'s got a lot of good, definitely, but I'm not sure I definitely see that. I see a lot of, hey, he's in the top 10 conversation, the top 15 conversation for receivers and all that. But, yeah, from what I've seen from Nabers, it's pretty damn special and well-rounded and not a lot of weakness there. And, damn, he's good. And, of course, you know I like the other guy too. But it's a good conversation, and it is funny, right? And the most unpredictable thing maybe in all of pro sports,
right,
that the community that follows it goes, no, this is not unpredictable. This is the way it is. And we all agree.
Yeah.
And how dare you say we're wrong? And that is like a weird psychology.
Now, we know
experiment.
After the draft that we'll be wrong on, you know, 33% of these guys.
Right.
But, you know,
right,
we just all agree that we don't know who that is right now.
Yep.
Old Hawk fan says, I always wonder, LSU had a top quarterback, two top 10 wide receivers. How'd they lose so many games? And so that's what I kind of brought up on the podcast before.
Yeah.
I was like, man, what was wrong with their defense? Well, Pete dug into the numbers. The win-loss
numbers, their defense
wasn't very good,
right.
I think, but they also, their three losses, they were 10-3. They lost to Florida State, who was undefeated until they all quit.
Right,
first game of
the year, too.
Ole Miss they lost to, who had two losses themselves to Georgia
lost
and Alabama.
Lost in a shootout to Ole Miss.
And they lost to Alabama.
Right.
So
I mean,
that
come
was
on.
It for
yeah,
LSU.
I mean, you're talking about two of, you know, the four best teams in football they lost to, definitely. You know, and the Ole Miss game was close, and they blew some opportunities or whatever else. But yeah, I haven't evaluated their defense, but I can tell you, yeah, it didn't have anything to do with their offense. That's for sure. I mean, their offense was explosive. They made a ton of big plays. The quarterback's awesome. The receiver's awesome. You know, again, well, I mean, you know, it goes into like, how did you could say that about a lot of like teams, like, well, how did Tua with four first round receivers in the Alabama and nine first round even, how do they not win it every year? How did they lose?
Ohio State.
Right. Or Joe Burrow and the LSU with Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase. They played that team. Oh, they're kind of good. Right. So there's a little context to that. That's not fair. And Florida State is stacked. Florida State's fucking good. I mean, gosh, by all due accounts, if they don't lose the quarterback and all of that, I mean, when you talk about teams that were most impressive in football to me, I mean, we know Michigan was awesome, but damn, you know, I was like, a Georgia should have been in it, and Florida State was of that caliber if they have their starting quarterback.
Just kick Texas out of there. I mean, come on, get them out
probably
of there.
Probably. Listen,
the
I'm not
going to
be
there.
One that's going to fight against that. But
Texas got some dudes, though, here, too.
Yes, they do.
So this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
You still need more time with your corner rankings.
Yeah.
You got a few guys to look
got
at.
Got a few so guys left
push
here.
That till Monday. We got Devin McCourty going to join the podcast, too, so that'll be really cool.
Yep.
So what we're going to do today is ask me anything. So literally anything. Which we usually got more random questions. We haven't gotten the real random questions. Like, my use of a bidet hasn't come up in like a year and a half.
Yeah, what's up with
right?
that?
What's going on with
Nobody's
that?
Been asking me about my weed habits. Nothing, right?
Yeah, right.
So
Pete,
maybe it's
can we
Pete.
Find that?
Pete's the filter. He's not putting it out there.
Pete's got
much.
A lot on his plate, though.
No, I know. And like, what I want to ask you, too, because this is also left from the pod, right?
Yeah.
You know, you've gotten your armpit sweat under control. Right? What's been going on? Well, and that's just part of why you're wearing the hoodie every time? Is this
the
why?
The hoodie helps, I think, sometimes. Some tighter hoodies you can still sweat through. Maybe I'm just more comfortable now. No, I don't know what's happened.
Okay.
I just tried to wear looser-fitting clothing. But during the Lions playoff game, I sweat through that hoodie.
Well, yeah,
remember
yeah
that?
Yes, you did. Yeah, yeah. You've sweat through some hoodies for sure, but I haven't noticed it lately. So.
You know, I don't know if it's new deodorant that I've got,
or maybe
helping.
It's not crazy energy drinks that your body's trying to detox out of itself.
You know, that's actually
right?
a good point.
Well, that's exactly the body detoxes through the armpit. That's definitely one of the biggest places.
Really?
Yes, 100%. That's a scientific fact where it gets a lot of stuff out of there. That's why I have a problem because mine's like, well, you have too much THC in you. We need to get a little out. There I have go. The sweaty pit problem.
Yeah, raise your arms. It's gone. Yeah,
right.
That's
yes.
interesting.
Yes.
Do you notice it more when you're, you know, more?
Yes, 100%. I do. I notice that I'll wake up the next morning, I'll get dressed and get going. I'll be like, man, I'm not even hot. And I'm like,
already sweating.
I'm like already, but I'm just sweating in my armpit. Like I'm not hot anywhere.
Interesting.
But my body's like, whoa, you smoked one too many last night, and we need to get a little
We're
out of
there. Show you how
right.
much you smoked last night.
Yeah, right.
So we got ask me anything about anything really here. So we got teams, but we'll start kind of with what we've been talking about here.
Yeah.
And before we get to the ask me anything, let's just pick off a couple more wide receivers you want to give a little more love to.
Sure,
because
sure.
you went through your Robin Hoods
yeah.
last time we were here, and that was Troy Franklin from Oregon, Ricky Pearsall from Florida, Adonai Mitchell, yep. Texas, Keon Coleman, Florida State,
right.
and Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. But this is such a deep class.
Yes,
that
it is.
You walked away, and you're like, God dang, I got to mention these other people because by the end of the year, who knows? You said in the right offense, right fit, right system, they could be one of the top rookie wide receivers.
Definitely.
Stat-wise.
Exactly right. Right. You know, that's the other thing that confuses the receiver conversation a little bit, right? Or you go like, wait, this guy's freaky, but he got on a team and an offense that just doesn't do a whole lot, right?
Yeah.
Oh, now we got Puka Nacua. He's got a, you know, Hall of Famish quarterback, a Hall of Famish, you know, coach, and an awesome receiver to take some attention away from. And then, oh, well, he's the best, right? And it's like, well, no, yeah, he's awesome. Don't get me wrong. But there'd be other guys in last year's draft that would have impressed us more than they did if they were in that situation, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to take anything away there. But situation, of course, is big. And, of course, when it comes to receiver, because how that offense, who's the quarterback and all that does dictate a lot of, you know, your success story there. And, yeah, I mean, I told you, I think I had 23 so odd players that I watched at wide receiver. There's probably a few more that I left on the table, but I knew they weren't going to be top 4 or 5 round type of guys, right? You know, but probably still draftable. And I want to make sure I get in the names. And when I got done with the pod on Monday, you know, I was just like, you know, I always go back through my notes a little bit
yeah.
and just go, oh, what did I leave? And I knew we were going to do this. And I was the one name that I am mad I didn't elaborate on a little more right off the bat. Is Jermaine Burton from Alabama, right? Jermaine Burton, when I went back and looked at my notes, I was like, well, you know, I should have gave him more love. He was in the running for one of my top 5, you know, maybe the 5th spot, right? With Roman Wilson and Troy Franklin there to where I was like, oh, these guys are good. Who do I want to make 5? I went with Roman Wilson, but Burton was very much in that conversation and think he's made for the NFL. One, I don't even think he got to play really his true position in college. I think he's going to be best in the slot. Right. He played outside. He's got good speed. I think he's actually got better speed than we talked about than the 4.45 he ran at the combine, because when you see him go deep and stuff, he goes by people.
Yeah.
Right. And he's got some acceleration. There's no doubt about that. He's got a great pair of legs and, you know, he can cut on a dime. Whether the ball's in his hands as a ball carrier or just watching, you know, his route tree. And he didn't run a ton of routes because they had a quarterback who was a runner and a little raw, right? So they kept it kind of simple. But from what I saw between those two things, I went, oh, man, you know, he's got some sudden twitchiness to him. He can put his foot in the ground, let alone he's got some strength where he catches the ball over the middle. He's going to run through some arm tackles. He'll be able to lower the shoulder and bounce off a guy. So I really like Jermaine Burton was my point. And he's one guy where I go, eh, you know, again, you know, next year everybody, oh, you made Roman Wilson 5. It should have been Jermaine Burton. And I go, yeah, Jermaine Burton is definitely in that running and one of those guys that he goes to the right spot or whatever, watch out. He'll be able to kick some ass right from the get-go.
That's why doing this, you're almost guaranteeing to be wrong.
Yeah,
you're gonna
no,
be wrong
I know that.
Because situation
That's why
spot.
I have no fear. And that's why I go with what I see and what I evaluate and what I write on the damn paper. That's to me where the whole community's wrong too. They're not so worried about being wrong and on freezing cold takes and all that. And it's just like I've always told you. I've been around some of the greatest minds in the history of the sport. I've seen them be wrong. I'm not afraid to be wrong.
Yeah.
You know you're going to be wrong, right? It's just part of it. You got to look at it like baseball a little bit and go, man, you know, I know it's not, you want to bet better than 300, but you got to realize you're going to have some swings and some misses and some strikeouts and not going to be perfect
well,
that
Pete's
way.
Well, Pete's got a good question, too. Are the GMs also scared to be wrong? And of course they are. They want to pick the right guys or else they lose their job.
Right.
But they do get a little boost if they're just like, hey, we picked this guy, but look at everyone had him as the number 2 wide receiver.
Definitely
so,
some politics and some safeness and some, yes, some of that goes into it for sure. I don't, you know, ooh, wait, we have this guy who's been put up on a pedestal and everybody's been telling us all about. We have another guy that we have an equal grade to, or it's very close, right? And there's some elements, man, we really like, but gosh, he went to this school. The stats weren't that good. The fan base isn't that excited about him.
Every article would say we reached for him.
Let's go to this guy here, right? It's just a safer pick, right? And then is that some of that go on? Absolutely goes on in the NFL.
All right, so who are some of the other wide receivers that need some love
here? Ladd McConkey does for Georgia, right? Ladd McConkey, I mean, again, along the lines of a Ricky Pearsall, right? And I know they're both white, and I don't mean to make that, you know, that kind of talk,
kind of like Adam Thielen, Wes Welker type,
exactly.
Edelman.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, Jordy Nelson comes to mind.
Who other white guys can we think about? No, but you know what I think is interesting about, you know, like a guy like Ladd McConkey and Ricky Pearsall, they don't have like the build of jitterbug type of guys totally, right? Mm. That's where they're a little different here. I think ultimately they're going to be great in the slot. But this is a bigger human than an Edelman or a Wes Welker or that type of guy.
Yeah, 6 foot 186 for McConkey.
Exactly right. And the type of speed where you go, wait, if you put him outside, he can run by people. Like, this is not just like, oh, you know, white guy receiver who can read a defense and cut on a dime and runs good routes and is quarterback friendly. No, there's a little bit to, like, you can go out here and go, oh, wait, they're going to bump Ladd? My old Ladd McConkey over here, they're gonna bump him. He's running a go route here. I like Ladd on a go route against this guy, right? So this is not just like some one-trick pony that needs to be in the slot. That's where I like Ladd. So definitely glad to give him some love. And I think, guys like him, like a Puka last year, they're made for the NFL because they're polished. They're kind of ready to go. The route running's good. They got great hands, right? And they're going to be like, coaches are going to be like, wait, you know, hey, I can make him right here, and I know what I'm going to get from him and all of that. Now, these are not the kind of guys, too, where you're just going to go, hey, I'm going to line him up outside all game, like Jamar Chase, right? And go, he'll beat everybody man-to-man, or they're just going to have to double him, right? They got to figure it out. So they're not that. And, of course, you know I value that more than, like, hey, I'm Puka Nacua and I'm awesome, but I got to be moved around and stacked and a little bit every now and then. I can't just line up and go, I'll beat the best corner in football all game long, right? And there's a difference there, and that's where, again, the stats and all that stuff can be a little misleading, right? Puka Nacua's stats are better than A.J. Brown's last year, right? I mean, he ain't A.J. Brown, I promise you. He's not. A.J. Brown is the guy you can go, we're just going to put you in one spot the whole game, and we know you'll win if it's man-to-man. And if it's double, well, shit, we still might throw you the ball, right? I mean, there's a difference there, and I don't even know. I think Puka's stats were better than A.J. Brown's, but
close, actually. Yeah. I think, I don't know, yeah. You have
Yeah, they're much better,
They were much better?
Yeah, he had 105 receptions. Oh, he had
1,600 yards for Puka.
Puka had, not much Brown. A.J. Brown's 30 yards behind him.
30 yards. Yeah, there we go. So he's got that on him. A.J. Brown, I'm not that much
behind. Pete saying, though, last season, my bad. Like, there was only one season with Puka. So.
I thought you were talking about 2017.
Oh, I got you. He thought he was talking about rookie year. A.J. Brown's rookie year.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You have two more receivers you want to give love to. Devontae Walker for North Carolina, Johnny Wilson for Florida State, who I looked at and I was like, that's Gronk out there now in height and kind of the way he moves sometimes, but not necessarily an ability. He's not going to be Gronk, but he does strike you as a bigger 6'6 receiver out there. Wilson and Walker, what do you have?
Yeah,
on
Walker. I mean, Walker's my kind of guy now. You know what I mean? Now, Walker is like, he's an X all the way. He needs work as a route runner. But, you know, he's got size and he can fly, right? And you know I like that. And, you know, maybe where I missed on, like, the receiver that came out of North Carolina a few years ago, right? The speed guy.
Downs.
No. I made him a top five receiver.
Deami Brown,
right? Right? Where maybe I didn't take into enough account of how he plays through contact and how good the route running is, right? And there needs to be a little baseline there of something, right? Where I was – Devontae Walker is a lot like that. I mean, he runs by everybody. I mean, this straight-ahead speed is phenomenal, right? You know, but it's technique stuff. It's steps all over the place. It's arms flailing everywhere when he's about to make a break, right? And then when he has the ball in his hands, he has not shown great change of direction ability or the ability to stick his foot in the ground and make people miss, right? Where, like, this is where self-scout thyself with Deami Brown, right? I was a little bit, like, so enthralled with the speed and running by people and all of that, right? And I kept going, I wish there was a little bit more make a guy miss after the catch or do all of that, right? But I kind of just went, well, he's fast, and he'll figure out how to run routes. And, yeah, I sort of self-scout myself to go, you know, that's wrong. There wasn't enough evidence there, right? You know how sometimes I piece it together and go, he has a basic route tree? Well, like I said it about T. Higgins the other day. Basic route tree, but I saw T. Higgins do things with the ball in his hands that made me believe he could stick his foot in the ground and break and run sharp routes, right? Deami Brown, I kind of swept that under the rug, and I shouldn't have, and that's where I was wrong, and I won't do that with Devontae Walker, who's very similar that way in that attribute.
NFL.com gave this comp to Devontae Walker. Alec Pierce, another Sims draft special.
Right. Now, Alec Pierce can really run routes, right? Alec Pierce, and really in a lot of ways, is more like almost like a Ladd McConkey or a Ricky Pearsall in a lot of ways. Maybe a little faster, but I understand what they're saying. Bigger type of receiver, long, and he can go by people. And again, that's where, you know, Alec Pierce, people don't realize it. I think sometimes people see the skin color and go, hey, he's not going to run by people. He's a burner. And you go, no, he's a burner. He just hasn't been in an offense out there in the Colts yet with a young quarterback or Gardner Minshew, who's not a great deep ball thrower, that could totally kind of show what he has yet as a player. Yeah. We'll see where that goes this year.
Last year. Right. I was watching one against
Titans we saw. That was it.
And our new Detroit Lion and Meek Robertson. He blew by him.
Yeah, he did. That's right.
Johnny Wilson, what do you think of him?
Well, Wilson is like, he's just intriguing.
Florida State,
giant human being, 6'6", over 230, right? Where I go, you know, one, you know, it's, there's like, can he play tight end? Like, those are the things I think of. Can he put his foot in the ground? He's not afraid to dominate, like, DBs coming off the line of scrimmage and run block, or if they jam him, he'll just run them over. He does have pretty good feet. He's got pretty good speed for that. Now, it can just be a little lethargic and clunky at times and all that. So you'd have to find how you want to use them and the role in which you want to use them and all that, right? But, you know, there's a mold there to think. And, again, I'm not saying this guy's a top two, probably not even in the top three rounds of the draft. But there's some things there where you go, huh, you can get him on our team. Let's see what he's about. Can we find a niche for him? Can he play tight end? Can he do something like that, you know? Can we depend on him a few times a game in big situations, jump balls in the back of the end zone, 50-50 ball, box out a guy on a back shoulder, whatever? You know, find your way that way, right? Let alone maybe a big slot receiver, because he can stick his foot in the ground and come out of breaks a little bit. I found him interesting. And, I think when I went through the draft, you know, we hit a Jermaine Burton, Keon Coleman, Malachi Corley, Troy Franklin, Marvin Harrison Jr., Xavier Leggett, Ladd McConkey, Adonai Mitchell, Malik Nabers, Odunze Pearsall, Brian Thomas Jr., Devontae Walker, Johnny Wilson, Xavier Worthy. I think those are the top 15 guys in the draft for me, right? And I just wanted to make sure I said that and got their names all out
there. So to that point, Kelvin Hill says, listening to your assessment of this year's wide receivers in the draft, sounds like most teams will be able to draft a good one as it's deep with talent. Yeah. Do you see the wide receivers following the running backs as becoming devalued in the draft and at a second contract stage because there's so many? Now, we've talked about this a little bit already.
Right.
But like, how do you think teams are now – you think teams are going to change the way they fill their wide receiver rooms? Like, is there a shift coming – in the way
I do think there's a shift to
teams
a degree.
Attack this.
To a degree, right? I think that there'll be less reluctance, maybe, to draft and replace the sixth, the seventh, eighth year receiver, right? And just go, hey, we're seeing all around the league. It's second and third rounders coming in right away, and they're playing, and they understand the game, and they can do it. We could save a little money. Right, getting rid of receiver who's in his seventh year and get this guy in the third round and depend on him. That's where I think it's going to lose some value. Mm-hmm. Where I also think it could lose some value is for the second wide receiver number twos as we go along for the same type of reason. To go like, hey, there's so many coming out, right? And there's guys even in free agency that people don't really know, right? And he wasn't in the right spot, but he's a number two. We're going to get him for a lower number and make him our number two instead of paying the guy everybody talks about who we think is a number two, but he thinks he's a number one and he wants big money, right? I think that's where it's going to hurt. But it's not going to hurt the guys we talked about at the top of the show. Right? There are proven star commodities where I don't think it's going to ever hurt the top tier of the market. Right? That's where I think it's a little different maybe than the running back position, where I do think the drop-off of trading A.J. Brown to go to Treylon Burks is too great of a risk and way too big of a drop-off as compared to, let's just say, we get rid of Derrick Henry and we got Tajay Spears and we still got a 1,000-yard rusher this year, right? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? But A.J. Brown to Treylon Burks, we were like, no, we lost like 1,300 yards of offense. Like, what do we do there? So those guys I don't think is going to lose the value. I think it's going to be the second-tier guys, that second-, third-tier guys that could be in trouble. You know, veteran receiver who wants $12 or $15 million a year, they're going to be like, no, you can take six or seven, or we'll fucking draft somebody else, right?
Yeah.
I think that's where it's going to hurt those guys, but not quite to the extent of running backs. We'll see where it goes. Hey, and to your question here, it's a great question in my personal life here with Kelvin Hill. I went to the Madison Square Garden, the Big East Final Four on Friday night.
Yeah.
I was sitting close to Aaron Jones, right?
Oh.
You know what he asked me at halftime in one of the games?
What?
He goes, hey, I'm getting the running backs. We're getting together. He goes, we want to try to fix this running back market. He goes, what do you think we should do? He goes, you got any ideas? And I said, you're talking to the guy here that's started this conversation 8 years ago when I first got into podcasts and how much bullshit this was. And I used all my lines, right? You guys are the fastest. You guys could fight a D tackle in the middle of the locker room and everybody would be like, oh, man, the running back and the D tackle, it's a good fight. Look at this. Get your popcorn, right? I mean, they're the strongest pound for pound, right? They're the freakiest guys on the team. And they're getting paid like they're the 27th best guy on the team, right? So they don't get it. And he asked me, and he goes, well, I need some ideas. I don't know what to do. And he goes, well, I got some for sure. And he was like, well, please tell me. He's like, what's the first one? And I said, all running backs, right, should be free agents after year one, right? Or there's like a baseline number. Like if you rush for 1,000 yards as a rookie or 850, you get to become a free agent. You've proven that you're that, right?
Yeah.
Or you know, some other way in which they can hit free agency in a quicker way. Or a way where we can get, hey, the running back, right, dollar for dollar doesn't count the same way as everybody else on the roster, right? You see that like in the NBA, they have like, what do they call that? Like special exemptions of players, right?
Right.
Where it's like, we pay them $100 million, but really only $75 million counts against the cap, right?
Okay.
I'm just using round numbers there.
Yeah.
To where things like that
you
can
went
be
over
done.
This all with Aaron Jones during the
half-time.
Big East
Yeah, it might have been in between the first and second game. Yeah, semifinals.
Yeah.
Well, I had a smoke and a drink,
oh, okay,
as usual, but no, we were just talking ball. And, so those would be some of the things I certainly
was
would
he writing
at.
Him to, was he like, okay, I got that?
No,
was
but he took, I mean, he took my number because he's like, when I get into this with the running backs, I want to visit this conversation.
Here would be my thought on that.
Yeah.
I didn't expect to talk about this, but why does it matter? Why does it matter if running backs are getting what they think they deserve compared to other positions? You know, I mean, what we're operating in right now is as free a system as there is.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
it's the free market.
Right.
Right. Why do we need to finagle it in such a way to get this one position group paid a little bit more compared to other position groups would be my question.
I hear you there. Because one, for what I said, these are really special athletes and players that are not getting valued the way they should to a degree. The second thing I would say...
But I would say to that, like,
yeah.
What's preventing them from getting valued that? Like,
because there's so many.
Well,
and
but that's a free market,
I
right?
Know. It's so, a like, free market,
you'd have
right?
to limit the number
but
of running backs that could go into.
But yet everybody knows the value of how awesome of Saquon Barkley is.
But,
right?
but how like, do you determine a value is like a free market is like the best way
yeah.
to do that.
No,
right?
And, no, I get you. And the
if
fact
it was
that
worth it for teams to pay him more.
Be successful and win Super Bowls and do it without the top tier guy. I get it. It is. It's hard. My biggest reason, though, would be this, that no position is running back with the physicality and the shortness of the career.
Yeah.
That would be the biggest thing, right? You're talking about the freakiest guys in the sport, and if you get drafted in the first round, you never really get to go to free enterprise like you're talking about and become like, oh, I'm open to the market.
No,
you never
true.
Get that, and that's fucked up, right? Here's Saquon Barkley, the freakiest guy on the Giants for the last 5 years, and this was the first time he got to hit the fucking open market. That's not right. And never mind, he's gotten fucking hit by 90,000 dump trucks and, you know, other people. You're just killing them all the time. So that's where I do think I'd like it to be.
That, I think, is a good point. The nature of the position.
Right.
And the status of the position. Because I do think you can make the argument that the NFL is a better entertainment product if you have big superstar running backs like Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, Thurman Thomas,
Derrick
you know,
Henry,
me growing up,
those guys, Derrick
right, Henry,
right.
like those guys are the stars of the game.
Right,
you
McCaffrey
make sure
was one of the stars of the game.
They're
right.
protected and well compensated,
right.
and that you have more players through the pipeline that want to be
right.
those running backs.
And Pete's writing this down right here in our notes too. And here's another one of the things that I've said in the past: you have a running back performance based pool, right? Like buy that, where you hit these numbers, you make this certain amount of money, no matter what, right? You're top five in the NFL in rushing, right? You make this money, period. And
sure.
it doesn't count against the cap. It almost is like the NFL rewards these guys for, hey, you know, thanks for being so entertaining and ducking your head down and getting fucking clobbered on the head with 90 roundhouses from Mike Tyson this year,
yeah.
let alone the other 90 uppercuts he sent you and all the 90 below the belt into your thigh shots he sent. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's where it is. I didn't
yep.
mean to go this way either,
no,
but
no,
it's
no.
an interesting conversation.
It is interesting. Pete yeah. notes here, he goes, do we have a lot of good young wide receiver prospects now because of a shift? Where the freakiest young
definitely,
athletes decide to
definitely.
Play wide receiver
yeah.
instead of running back. And the counter to that would be like, is that worse?
Yeah.
Like what if the game just migrates into that and evolves into that? And it's like
it has to a degree. We see teams that go,
now.
We don't run the ball, so we use the short passing game and the screen game to do our running game.
And then
right?
there will be so few running backs that the ones that do emerge will get paid a ton.
Hey, I think of like Jabril Peppers, right? Jabril Peppers was going to be the number one running back in the country. He was the number one running back in the country. He made a conscious thing here in New Jersey to go, I'm not playing running back for the reasons that Pete just stated there.
Yeah.
Right? So, yes. And I think like, hey, listen, I think there's some guys, yeah, that are playing a receiver in the NFL right now that were probably running backs and went, wait, what? I don't want to do that. It's my career's going to be short. I'm not going to make the money. Let me do that. So, yeah, that's a big part of it, let alone the schools are throwing the ball more, 7-on-7, all that. So playing receiver is cooler now than it was when we grew up, when you
yeah.
were like, when you went home after a high school game, you're like, Mom, friends, we threw the ball 8 times today.
Eight.
I got to throw at 8. I'm like a fucking Dan Marino of high school football,
yeah.
right?
If you played wide receiver
now
in high school,
like, right.
when I grew up,
yeah.
you would block. You would run out. You'd kind of like
get a reverse.
Run your defensive
maybe.
Guy out of the play.
Yeah, right.
That was it.
Exactly
basically.
Right. Now, receivers in a big-time program, they're like, or the quarterbacks, they're like, I got 20 targets today.
Yeah.
Just today. The quarterback threw it 44 times. You know, so that's where the game and the world has changed that way.
All right, so I did not
yeah.
expect to go there.
Yeah,
this isn't Ask Me Anything, so we will try to ask you anything. Let's try to get through as many of these as we can, and we'll start with the questions on the draft rankings, because that's where we just left off last time. One of our top homies, always commenting in, Tomas Pena, says, Malik Nabers has elite speed and route running ability. However, I get concerned regarding his physicality and ability to work in traffic in the middle of the field. Do you think he can improve in this department? And another one of the homies out there, Brett Coleman, said, Chris, did you watch Neighbors in Florida State's game? Neighbors pressed 35 times in that game, not many more than 20 in any other game. So he is wondering if you've noticed any of those deficiencies or looked back and saw anything
with
that.
To Tomas Pena, it would be the first thing I would tell you. First off, he's punny strong and physical. He's 6 foot. He's 200 pounds. There's real strength there. I see, again, in the SEC, you heard me saying this before the show, the SEC, they don't call defensive holding. I mean, they don't call it. Like, it's everywhere. It's rampant, right? Where I look at games and go, oh, my gosh. I mean, Malik Namers, he got held like 12 times in this game, like blatant holds, like definitely going to get called in the NFL. But he's still open or fighting through it. So, you know, his ability on the outside with the one-on-one 50 jump balls, I like all of that, let alone his releases are clearly the best in the draft, like clearly. So I don't have any there. And to Tomas, you know, how many catches he catches over the middle, breaks tackles, makes people miss that way. He's made for it that way. So I don't think you have to worry about that. Now, to our guy Brett Coleman, right, I didn't watch the Florida State game on film for him, that complete game. But Pete told me about it. So I kind of looked at it real quick so I could answer it and talk about it, right? First off, Florida State game, yeah, not one of his best games statistically. You know,
the first game of the year.
Right, first game of the year. The kid number 8 that was covering him and some of those is damn good on Florida State. He is. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong. But don't go by the stats either, right? I mean, there's plenty, again, of other plays where you look at and go, he's open. Just the ball didn't go to him. Like, read number 1 was over to the left, right? Read number 2 was Malik over the middle. Malik's wide open, and if he gets the ball, he's going to get 15, 20 yards. But Jaden Daniels had the first guy open, and he hit him, right? So that's where you got to piece through that stuff a little bit. You know, he catches a back shoulder on number 8 one time, like a little stop route where it's like a curl route. He beat him so badly off the line of scrimmage. If he runs a go route, it's going to be an 80-yard touchdown. He's going to walk in, right? You know, there's some other plays in the game where I go, he's gone down the sidelines. Jaden Daniels just decided to go somewhere else with the ball here, right? So, you know, again, it had no concerns. I really don't see much to not like about Malik Nabers. Like I said the other day, the only thing that you can really pick on is go, hey, 6 foot. I wish he was 6'2 or 6'3. Yeah. But that's, you know, being very picky.
Renardo Green is the Florida State corner.
Oh, that's
corner.
Him. Right. Yep. Gotcha.
Who
gotcha.
Could be amongst your top 5 when we start talking about these guys coming up on Monday.
Yeah.
Brian Thomas, also on that LSU team.
Right.
AJ Montana 69 says Thomas gets separation because, as you just mentioned, the top corner is covering Neighbors. What's your rebuttal to that?
Well, this is like not NFL. This is not like It's Deion Sanders follow around the number one receiver. That's like doesn't go on a whole lot in college football, right? And again, I haven't gone through all the DBs and all of that yet, but that's not really a thing as far as like, oh, he gets shadowed. And I see Brian Thomas beat everybody. I mean, everybody. So it's not a that's where the game is different. I'm watching, like, let's say I've watched 12 corners so far, 14 corners somewhere in there, right? You know, of those top ones even, very few, they might have a few plays every game where they follow somebody in a big situation where they go, wait, you're our right outside corner, but here's a big moment, move inside and take this guy, right? Here, right? There's not a ton of that going on. You get to see everybody against everybody. And in the SEC, of course, you're getting to see a lot of top-tier corners. And like I said, all the talent we talk about in the SEC on the offense and all of that, right? The SEC is known to be more of the NFL-ish type of conference where the games are 27-24, 24-21, all of that. And I think a little bit of that is just because, yeah, the referees let the defense They give them a lot of leeway to hold and push and do all that type of stuff.
Yeah. So what's the Big Ten's excuse? Is that the offenses just aren't good enough to score in the 30s or 40s?
Well, a little bit more conservative style. I don't think you guys as a whole maybe have some of the receivers and explosive players the SEC has, right? You know, the elements of cold and all that play into it as well, right? You know, but yeah, as a whole, the Big Ten's really good. It's good. It's just a different style of football. And even as good as it is, you know, I don't think it's as good as the SEC.
So Pete wants to know, how much man coverage do you see the corners play in college? Is there more zone in college than in the NFL?
Yeah, I would say so. Yes. Yeah. Right. And that you know. Yeah, you get to see a little bit of everything. But right now, I would say there's more zone than anything else. Right. And then, you know, what you're starting to see, too, and again, when I'm evaluating the corners and all that, right, the context clues a lot of the times where if the guy's really good, they let him play man. If they don't think he can cover the man, they play a lot of zone, right? We're going to get into that next week where I'm going to be like, what? Like, this team doesn't even want this guy to play man, and you're going to tell me he's the best corner in the draft?
Oh,
like,
no.
You know, some of that stuff.
Don't tell
I'm not saying it's
don't
the best
tell me
corner.
We're going to do this again.
I don't even know who's regarded as the best corner in the draft, so don't worry.
Well, the one thing I do know is that Marvin Harrison Jr. was regarded as the number one receiver by many people, although it is funny. Like, we were doing the podcast, and while we were doing the podcast, a tweet came out from Daniel Jeremiah that was like, you know, a lot of teams have Malik Nabers number one over Marvin Harrison.
Right. I had a lot. That's what I got a lot of tweets for, is all a lot of tweets, not tweets, texts from people. Right? Damn. Now everybody's trying to say the Nabers is right up there with ever since you put your rankings out. Right? All of a sudden now Nabers. That was one thing I did get feedback from a lot of people.
Yeah. The bandwagon is now forming behind you. Hair Club President says, love your analysis. Just wondering if it's possible that Marvin Harrison Jr. as wide receiver 3 is similar to being too low on Will Anderson Jr. Just wondering if possibly missing something here.
Hey, I, like I said, I'm never going to sit here and tell you that everything I do is set in stone and I'm the god of all gods here when it comes to this conversation, right? I feel like with the Will Anderson thing, maybe where I didn't take it enough into account is going back to prior years and then taking into account of he basically played head up on a tackle and didn't get to play and do what he did this year, right? And not seeing through that. So that was like where I would go, you know, the film wasn't crazy impressive, but I think part of that was because they told him to put on weight. You got to be a little bit more strength here for how we need to use you this year. He went to the Houston Texans, and I know this for a fact. Yes, they were like, get lean, fast, explosive. That's all we care about. And that changed some things for him for sure, right? But, no, I think that's where I kind of messed out. Now, with, like, wide receivers, hey, I know I'm not foolproof or wrong here, but I don't know if there's an element like that I feel like I'm missing or anything there, right? And I did go back and watch last year, too. So I feel good about where I am. But, again, we'll never know until it becomes lights, camera, action, and we see them out there on the field and what they do from that point on.
And we do want to note that you did vote for Will Anderson, defensive rookie of the year.
One of my pet peeves I hate on social media is when people like, you were wrong about this, like blah, blah, blah. And I go, I know, and I've admitted it 700 times, but you just look at one thing and you just go from it. And that's, again, I will tell you, if Marvin Harrison Jr. kicks some ass next year, I'm not going to be here going, well, I think I got to still make a reason to give him the nod. Like, no, Will Anderson proved me wrong. He kicks some ass, and I did vote for him, no doubt.
So you just said you did go back and look at Marvin Harrison Jr. with C.J. Stroud, because I did see a couple of tweets on that. They're like, well, yeah, of course, with Kyle McCord. No receiver is going to look all that awesome.
You go back to CJ Stroud thing a little bit, and you go, well, my same questions are there, except CJ Stroud just dropped it in his pocket a whole bunch, right? I still was like, it doesn't separate quite the way you'd like the guy to separate. But CJ is just, hey, open your pocket. I'll put it in there. And, the results were better. But I don't know if they were necessarily because of Marvin Harrison Jr. is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking about a superstar NFL quarterback and Kyle McCord, who was just getting his feet underneath him as a as a college quarterback, and I still think that's insane that they moved on from Kyle McCord at quarterback. That's crazy.
See my Syracuse Orange.
These are Syracuse Orange. It's crazy. Yeah. The guy's like one throw in the middle of the field open from them being the number one team in the country and beating Michigan in Michigan, and they moved them.
I mean, that's why it really is. It's like people say,
yeah,
not to go on another tangent, is that the NIL and all the transfer portal stuff is all player empowerment and helps players. And it's like a case like Kyle McCord. He certainly would be helped by being in a system for a couple of years. And I think these guys, it's not going to be to their benefit. Like, I don't think he's going to get better. And obviously it wasn't his choice necessarily. I think Ohio State said they were going to move on.
Yeah.
But, like, going from Ohio State to Syracuse and these quarterbacks going one spot here. Sam Hartman last year going from Wake to Notre Dame. He's not going to make him that much better of a quarterback. All right, my rant is over there. Great Nuz says about Rome Odunze. What's Odunze's best comparison? I've heard others say Larry Fitzgerald or Davante Adams. I think you said Davante Adams last time we were
Davante
on the pod.
Davante Adams, right? I'm not sure he's even as fast or explosive. Davante Adams is overall. Now, I know he ran a better 40 than Davante Adams coming out of the combine. I think Davante was like a 4.5 flat or whatever. Okay. But it is of that guy. And that, again, to me, hey, he's the guy I could be wrong about or look stupid for next year, because he's the guy that's NFL ready. He gets in the right offense. They know how to use route runners, right? Where we would come away next year and go, damn, Rome Odunze had 102 receptions for 1,200 yards, right? But it's not going to be the oh, he just lines up out here and dominates guys one-on-one and catches slants and runs for 60 yards after it and all that, right? You know, there's a little bit of that. But that's where I go Davante Adams, Keenan Allen-ish, right? It's that type of guy.
Yeah.
Again, really good, awesome, but not like superstar game changer, in my opinion. Needs a little bit of a system and an offensive coordinator that knows how to, you know, draw up plays where route running is of the most importance and go off of that, right? You know, we've talked about, like, hey, the Kansas City Chiefs, he goes to there. I don't think that's going to be a great fit. Kansas City's not necessarily always into that, right? They're not into routes. It's just like, hey, everybody run across the field that way and run across that way. And it's about pure speed and physical ability. He's not going to fit that. But if he went to a place like the Rams or somewhere else, shit, Chris is going to look wrong next year because he's going to have 103 receptions and I think he might be Offensive Rookie of the Year, right?
Well, isn't it funny? Like, every team may see Malik Nabers the same way you do, and so that they cover him differently, and it's just like, we'll shade the safety over there. We don't want Malik Nabers, and so, like, his numbers are down next year, and you'll look wrong just because every other team was scared of what he could do.
Well, that's what's going to be misleading at receiver, for sure. Exactly right, right. You know, there's definitely some of that goes on in football, and you know, that's where the numbers can be misleading and all the other things we talk about.
All right. Greg Feltz says, however unlikely, which of Marvin Harrison Jr., Nabers, and Odunze have the highest flat-out bust potential and why? Like, who can you envision out of those three?
Gosh.
You think it's highly unlikely for all three,
I do.
Correct?
Yeah, because I think, again, you get into the top 5, 6, 7 guys of this draft, I look at it and go, I don't really think there's bust factor in here.
What's the only path to bust you can see for any of these guys, outside of injury, of course?
I think it would probably be Odunze.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, I don't feel comfortable saying that.
Yeah.
You know? Odunze was a good team, cutting-edge college offense, really good quarterback, right? Defenses aren't good enough and intricate enough and have the pieces to even stop that type of offense in college football, so it really fit him that way. So I would guess I would go with him, right? But, yeah, I don't feel totally comfortable with really stating any of them. But yeah, because, Marvin Harrison Jr., his size is better than Odunze, right? I think making some of those back shoulder catches, 50-50 balls, he's better at that. And I do think his yak is better than Odunze as well, right? So those are things where I look at and I go, yeah, Odunze out of that group there is the least there. But, I don't see bust for Odunze.
Yeah.
I really don't.
So Pete notes that your category, your tier name for Marvin Harrison Jr. was no bust.
Yeah.
And so that makes sense. Right. So he wants to know, is this the safest top 5 wide receiver group you can remember? And maybe top 5 for sure.
I was going to say
top 3 definitely for you. Yeah. Seems like in a while.
Yeah, but even top 5, I would say that too. I would. Because You know, in years past, we had guys like a Henry Ruggs or a John Ross where you're like, ooh, I see the potential, right? There's some things that are really elite, and I like that, but there's some things that need work on, and I'm not sure, right? Like Xavier Worthy could be that guy, and I'm sure he's going to be in some people's top five or whatever. But he'd be the guy I'd go, well, he could be a bust. He could be one of those fast guys that doesn't work out. He doesn't handle contact very well. You get his hands on him, he really disrupts his routes, right? The yards after catch aren't quite as good what you think, right? So, I mean, like, again, yeah, I think out of this, I don't think I've ever felt as good about the receivers and the quarterbacks as far as the top five guys where I've gone, this isn't like, I'm not sure about 3, 4, and 5. This is like, now, damn, I like them all, right? And some other guys, too. And no, I don't see that being a part of this group this year.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
the charcoal mask, great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking.
Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice, I am so sorry, I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule, I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, let's get into the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You mentioned them. Orion Chuzzlewit. Hello, Orion. Good to hear from you once again. Hey, guys. The intermediate middle appears to be Caleb Williams' weakest area of the field, throwing to statistically.
Yeah.
Did that show up on film? Would it concern you given how other prospects on the shorter side, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, have had issues with it in the pros?
You know, I again, it'd be one where... you know, they didn't live over there and all that, but I see so many good throws over the middle of the football field that I don't worry about that. And then I know, I think we kind of hit this on the quarterback breakdowns a little bit. He threw the ball over the middle of the field more than Jaden Daniels, right? That was one of the things that we kind of showed, right? Jaden Daniels is
right.
Everything is outside the numbers or a go route down the field.
Yeah.
You know, and again, a lot of that is there with Caleb Williams too. But man, I see so many look to the left, first and second guy aren't open, go over the middle of the field and throw an incredible football there. No, I don't have any worries about that at all, let alone the other thing that's different than him with maybe some of the guys he's talking about there, right? Right, especially compared to Russ and even Baker a little bit. His ability to throw through lanes because he can change his arm angles is the most Mahomes-ish we've seen so far coming out in the draft, right? So that's where he's going to be different too. Like, oh, yeah, you're in my way, Ahmed, sure. But he's just going to go, let me drop my arm and I'll throw it right underneath your armpit, and I still throw strikes like that. And that's where I don't think it's going to be a problem.
You think there could be some problems for Drake May out of North Carolina. VMore 1724 said, why do you think that literally every other analyst has Drake May significantly higher, top three, on their draft quarterback rankings? Longtime huge fan of the pod, by the way.
Thank you.
You are the best in the business. So
wow.
They wanted to make sure that you did not think that was a slight. They were just curious.
No, it's good.
As to why everyone else has Drake May top three.
I get it. And, you know, again, this will be another one where I'm going to be interested to see where this goes, right? I think a little bit goes into the conversation of kind of like what we talked about earlier with Marvin Harrison Jr. and top guys, and it becomes groupthink, and it goes, wait, look at him. He looks like the prototype, right?
Yeah.
Ooh, when he throws it deep and far and he throws it hard, ooh, it's the prototype, right? It's all those type of things. The numbers are pretty good, you know? They were, you know, pretty good last year and kind of, you know, in the conversation for one of the better teams in football. So I think all of those things kind of match up a little bit. And then I think, too, when you look at his highlights, like we talked about that, you go, wow, wow, that's a damn good throw. Ooh, wow, right? But then, as you unpack it and continue to watch, and you watch all the throws from every game, you start to just go, like you heard me say, where I go, hey, there's a great throw. Woo, man, put it on a highlight reel. Oh, man, he missed that one. Oh, why did he leave the pocket there? Oh, hey, he completed it, but the guy had to fall to the ground. Ah, I missed the guy. Oh, man, not the right throw there. What is that? Ooh, highlight throw. Ooh.
I think
so there's a lot of that. And I think that's what you're going to see. Again, I think a lot of your top-tier evaluators are just diving into the draft right now. I'll be interested to see where it goes with Drake May. Again, I've been wrong. I know that. I mean, I didn't think Blake Bortles could throw, period. And they drafted him at number 3. I was literally like, I think my right arm is better than Blake Bortles' right arm. And I'm a lefty. And they still drafted him at 3. So, again, I didn't think Trey Lance could throw the ball all that well either. And my best friend drafted him at 3. So, yeah. I mean, again, I got, you know, hey, you don't know. You'll see where it goes. But this is one where here's where there's a difference in, like, I see the potential. I see some of the stuff that's really good.
Well, that would be the reason for ranking him top 3, right? Is that you believe the highlight reel throws and plays are more indicative of what he can become.
He can become, but that doesn't mean you're the number 3 pick. See, that's where there's a big difference, right? When I hear people on TV go, he should be on the Jordan Love plan, and then they also tell me he should be the 3rd pick of the draft, I go,
That's the crazy thing.
That doesn't make sense, guys.
I agree with that.
You're going to sit for 4 years. You're not the 3rd pick of the draft. Like, what? Like, come on. Listen to what you're saying. So that's where that doesn't match up. And here, the potential and all of that, and I hear the Justin Herbert thing, and it drives me crazy because I hear it everywhere. It's like Justin Herbert, and I've literally been telling people, like, if you hear somebody say that, you need to stop listening to them because they didn't watch Justin Herbert come out of college, right? Which is like, again, the team, all that stuff, all affected everybody's Justin Herbert thing. And I'm going, he can't run the routes, guys. There's nobody open. He literally hit the guy in the ear with the football. And there was the only place he could fit it. It was incomplete. And we're giving him a negative grade. And I'm going, that was like the most fucking unbelievable throw I've ever seen in my life. Play after play after play after play. Right? Where here I'm going, wow, great throw. Oh, incomplete. Oh, balls all over the place. Guy had to go to the ground. Ooh, somebody's open for a 30-yard crosser. What? He skipped it on the ground at the 20-yard mark? What? I mean, that's stuff you don't see from top-tier quarterbacks. And my point here where I was trying to get to, and I'm sorry it took me a while there, is he has a few mechanical deficiencies that I'm just not sure that I can just go, ooh, he'll fix that, right? I know I've been one to lessen on that stance and go, hey, we see enough quarterback coaches and stuff now where if I see something wrong, you know, I see guys get fixed a little bit more now. And it might have affected me in the past. And I self-scouted myself. But he's got a few where I go, I'm not sure this is going to be easily fixed. Mm. And he could be battling with this, and that's where it's going to be interesting with Drake May. He's, to me, like the wild card of the draft right now as I look at it.
The Cardinals do not need a quarterback. They have Kyler Murray, so where might they look? Maybe wide receiver. Alex Weber says, most mocks seem to have the Cardinals taking Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4, but I'm curious, what would you do as Arizona's GM? Take one of the receivers at 4 or trade down with a team like the Vikings or the Broncos and stockpile even more draft picks. Mm. So you are now in charge of the Cardinals. You're living in Arizona.
Yeah.
You got Cliff Kingsbury's old place kicking your feet up.
It's
loving life.
I'm pulling up their roster here as we talk. And
pull up the teams.
I just want to make sure that, you know, I give a good, honest assessment here. Again, most of these questions I do not know they're coming beforehand. And I'm also pulling up their free agency because I do want to see, like, is there something there that makes sense to me? You know, overall in free agency, okay, yeah, there's nothing to write home about. They signed Chris Moore, but no difference makers or anything at wide receiver that way, right? They got no Hollywood Brown anymore. Right, wide receiver certainly seems like the thing that would make sense to me. Okay, I like Michael Wilson, like we talked about, top 5 in Chris Sims thing last year, right? And I think he will be a go-to guy. I feel like, here's my feeling here. They definitely need a receiver. a lot of the what when you talk about trade down, it's what's your board, where are the gaps between your top receivers, right? If you have Marvin Harrison, let's just say they have him one. And they got Malik Nabers just a smidgen below, like Marvin Harrison 6.80 and Malik Nabers is 6.79, right? Mm-hmm. And then Brian Thomas Jr. is like 6.785, right? And they're all that close. Then I'd go trade down, right? Get some more assets and, you know, go from there. I feel like Monty Ossenford, their GM, being from New England, he was there all those years when Bill always traded down, right? I mean, New England, for about a 12-year period there, I mean, like 10 out of 12 years, it was like, New England's up, they're trading down. They're going to acquire more picks, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like he's from that school of thought. He showed us that last year. Also, too, I don't feel like it's in his DNA to go, I'm going to make it all about one guy at receiver, right? And be that, like, here's the guy, the receiver. I'm going to have the fantasy world, my fan base all on my back about getting this guy the ball all the time, right? I don't feel like that's in their DNA, right? So that's where I would say I feel like they're a trade-down candidate. But if you have – let me just say this on the other side of the story. Let's say they don't have, like, Malik Nabers has a significantly better grade than everybody else. He's at 7.0, right? And Marvin Harrison Jr. is at 6.65, and Brian Thomas Jr. is at 6.54 or whatever, right?
It's a big enough need for them that then
you
can
go,
pull the
wait,
trigger.
You're seeing a difference in a player here that I wouldn't trade down now to go with this guy, right? You got a guy here with a grade that's far and above the rest of the group. You need the position, right? It's imperative to your quarterback, your offense to be successful. You don't gamble with that. That to me. So there would be my little 2 cents on that.
They already have 11 draft picks. They got the number 4 overall and then 3 in the second round here.
They got 3 in the top 35, right?
Oh, third round, 66.
But now they got 3 in the top 35, if I remember.
In the top 35.
Yep. Yeah, so, you know, again, they went all in for this draft and where it goes, and we'll see. But, and the other part of that conversation, too, is evaluating the rest of the holes on your football team, right? To go, wait, I mean, I know we need a receiver, right? But I got them clustered up close to a group that they're all kind of close together, and I don't see anyone that think, all right, but damn, I need a right tackle. I need this position. I need that position. Then that might incline them to trade down. So those are, to me, the factors that go into figuring all that out.
Another team with a high draft pick, the L.A. Chargers. Where are they? Where are they, Pete?
They're 6 or 5?
Five. Right. They're 5. Yep. Jacob Morris says, did the Chargers get rid of Mike Williams and Keenan Allen because they have assessed that they need a rebuild, or do you think they believe in Quentin Johnston?
I think that salary cap issues are the biggest thing, right? Jim Harbaugh starting his new regime there. He wants his blank canvas, and I'm going to run things the way I want.
Perfect time to do that.
Exactly right. He doesn't want to hear Keenan Allen going, I only got 49 catches this year, and Jim Harbaugh's going, yeah, but we won, and we run the ball up the middle now, right? Yeah. So I think some of that doesn't really fit his philosophy.
Blake Corum had 38 carries and won by
3. He had Roman Wilson and a top 15 quarterback, and he ran the ball 30 straight times in the second half of a game. Don't give a shit.
Maybe Justin Herbert wants out,
he
too.
He is never going to make it all about a receiver. That's not in Jim Harbaugh's DNA. Come on, you know that. You've been watching Michigan the last few years. He's not about making the star guys more starry and diva-ish and all that. That's not what he is. Yeah. Right? He didn't do that with San Francisco. He inherited Michael Crabtree. Can you name any of the other receivers on the football team off the top of your head?
I was out there, too.
Right. He said, you know what? I'm going to get the biggest, baddest fucking offensive line you've ever seen, the amazing front seven. I'm going to build a team.
Vernon Davis.
Tight right. End. There would be one. Okay. But so, yeah, that's where I don't think he is I got to have a Tyreek Hill or an Odell Beckham Jr. in his prime type of guy, right? I just don't think he's that. And I think you add that to big-time salary cap issues, right? This point of the career where Keenan Allen's at. Mike Williams coming off ACL. I do have a first-rounder who, yeah, he's raw. He needs work. We talked about this on Monday. But, again, I would say the basic skills, size, all that are there. And they're going to try to develop him and make him a guy here. Yeah. And Joshua Palmer's not bad. And then Jim Harbaugh is going to be like, I've been in college football, and we'll find some fucking value third and fourth rounders that I've seen in person that I know are good, that maybe didn't get a lot of catches or were stuck on some crappy team. And, you know, I'll make that guy a part of our offense as we go forward, too.
They got Gus Edwards, too, now over there. So
got Gus Edwards.
He's going to run the ball a ton. And I don't think they're rebuilding. I don't think you have Justin Herbert. You pay him that much money.
No, they're
changing
the way they play, the philosophy of their team. I think you're exactly right about it. Like, I could see them going, who was your other receiver in Michigan? Cornelius Johnson?
Yeah, yeah.
He wouldn't shock me where we go, oh, they drafted him late in the fifth, early sixth round, right? And here we are next year in week eight, and we're like, yeah, Cornelius Johnson's their third receiver, right? He's third guy, and he's good. He's, you know, not a superstar, but he's good, and he's carved out a little role.
He's got the fifth most receiving yards for a rookie.
Why didn't you have him in your top five, Sims?
So Chargers not rebuilding. Maybe the Giants will be after this year. You never know. Yeah. Jim D., if the Giants draft J.J. McCarthy at six, do you suggest drafting a familiar target like Roman Wilson later in the draft? So let's say if this, then that.
Yeah.
Would you even do if this?
I wouldn't do the first thing.
There are people talking about quarterback for the Giants.
I know.
For sure.
I don't, again, that's another one where I don't feel like that's a Giants type of move. Let me have Daniel Jones and a rookie quarterback, Andrew Locke, and let's just create a fucking media frenzy here in New York about who's quarterback. And a huge year for our organization. And Brian Daboll and all that. Like, do you think he wants that? I just don't feel like that's in their DNA either, to make that type of move. You know, I always have believed the Giants are of a let's build the football team type of football team, right? That's what they are. And as you heard me say before, right, Daniel Jones is like problem 74 on the Giants list of problems last year. So, like, everybody has to look at it that way. Now, I'm all for drafting guys that you're familiar with later in the draft, if it makes sense and all of that, right? I mean, it'd be great. You got somebody in your locker room that's an ally, knows what you're all about. You get a receiver, and, hey, I know J.J. He's telling the other receivers what J.J.'s all about. It rallies the troops. I always do like that, right? Mm-hmm. But not so much to a point where it's like, We're pick 52, but we're going to trade up to pick 33 just so J.J. can have his buddy Roman Wilson there with him, right? Not to that extent.
Yeah, you don't want to reach too much for stuff like that.
Right.
The eighth pick goes to the Falcons this year, and Alex Levy, 31, says, should Atlanta take Neighbors or Rome if available at eight? So a lot of the mock drafts right now have them going defense, edge, Dallas Turner out of Alabama. But what do you
think? I feel like it would be that. Somebody that's a difference maker on the defensive side of the ball. If Neighbors was there at eight, that would be a tough one. And I'd go, oh, I don't know. You better be sure, right? Because I feel like with Odunze, they have that in Drake London. Route runner, bigger guy, can catch back shoulders, can run precise routes. That's who they got, right? Yeah. You know, to me, what they need is Neighbors who – again, grout runner, but can fly, and you have to respect that down the football field, or like a Brian Thomas Jr., right? To me, it's that kind of guy, right? But I don't think they're going to be in the department for that. Why? Because they just got Darnell Mooney, who's that guy, right? So I expect it totally to go on defense. You got a defensive head coach, right? There's a glaring need for pass rusher on their football team. I feel like it will go there. But, man, Neighbors at eight still there with Kirk Cousins, that offensive system, Drake London, Pitts, Bijan. Holy shit, you can have an elite offense with that O-line. And you could certainly go to that approach where, like, we're going to be so good on offense, you can't defend everything, and we're going to make life hard on you that way.
There's so many good elite offensive players in this year's draft in the top 10, which is why I hate the fact that the Bears have two picks in the top 10.
Oh,
they got the one at number one, Caleb Williams, off the board there.
Be scared with Caleb Williams and Malik Neighbors going there.
Okay, don't even talk about that. Silver Cat Pizza says, are the Bears one of the best rookie quarterback situations of all time? Usually rookies go to a terrible situation supporting cast, but Caleb walking into a decent situation, in my opinion.
Like, at Silver Cat Pizza, fucking, yeah, you're right, man. I've had these little arguments with Florio, right? Because Florio is like, oh, I don't know if the first quarterback should want to go to Chicago, right? And all that, all these type of things where I said this, I think it was on yesterday's show. I was like, I look at Chicago and go, it might be the best place a rookie quarterback can ever go. That's got big-time talent in the start. They're starving for a quarterback in Chicago. They're starving for that guy. He could go there and be the Michael Jordan of Chicago. They're like the same way. The Bulls suck. They're irrelevant. Oh, it's Michael Jordan. Whoa. Everybody tune in, right? I mean, it doesn't matter the number seven seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs. They got Michael Jordan. They're going to give the Celtics and Larry Bird a run for their money, right? I mean, that's – Caleb Williams is that. They're starving for it. So – what was I going to – oh, and to the point here, Silvercat, not yeah. only are the fan base, the organization, everybody want that kind of guy, you're exactly right. I mean, it was one of the better defenses in football last year, and it will be again this year.
The Bears were not the worst team in football. Normally the worst team in football gets the number one pick.
No.
But the Carolina Panthers and made sure that
exactly right. And if you take away maybe some of their early season schedules and you just go by the last half of the year, you'd go – well, no. I mean, if you just went off the last half of the year, you'd go, well, I think the Bears are probably picking around 18, 19.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they get in the playoffs? I'm not sure, right? I mean, offensive line, DJ Moore, the tight end, we've talked about all of that. Yes, this is an incredible situation, I think, for a number one pick, let alone the picks they have to come here in the rest of the draft to help support
them.
Right.
I can see it now. You're picking them to make the playoffs. I can already see
Bears win seven Super Bowls in 8 years, Ahmed. Ahmed leaves the Lions fan base for the Bears.
A1C laced up 44. We're moving on from the Bears.
Oh, wait. Anyway, at Matt D. Summy, is Brian Thomas too early at number nine?
I was going to move on from the Bears.
No, he's not too early for number nine.
But they got DJ Moore. They got Keenan Allen. I mean,
I know. He's not too early for number nine.
Not
no.
too early.
No. You know,
but for the Bears?
The Bears, we'll see.
Probably not.
The Bears, we'll see. You know, again,
don't take him.
I don't.
If he's there, don't take
him. The approach of we're going to be so good and elite in this area that it's going to change the whole way you have to play us, right? That's kind of what like Mahomes had when he went to Kansas City at first, right? It was they're so good on offense, and Tyreek and Kelsey and the rest of the crew is so good that you actually had to think about, wait, our offense isn't on the field with them, but we got to think about how we want our offense to play because they're so good over there that we got to be a little careful with our own offense to protect the defense, right? There's some of that that goes on, and you know, I am a fan of that approach.
Please don't let that happen. They have 1-9, and then what else do they have here, Pete? 75, third round, fourth round, 122. All right, that's not nothing else after that, so you can't get depth. Bears are screwed. A1C laced up 44. Chris, tell us more about your GM goal. Do you still want to be a GM for an NFL team? What's your workout regimen nowadays?
Oh,
wait, is that related? Are those both related?
There's like he wants to know a little life. He wants to know a little work, right?
Pete says if you're the face of a franchise, you have to be, you know, a good-looking face of the franchise. Fit.
I try. I'm trying to, you know, stay fit, stay looking good on camera. I would love to be a GM, right? But I think I'm very happy with where I am in life right now. And, you know, my kids are in school. You know, if the right situation presented itself, you know, down the road at some point and all that, whether that's GM or be the assistant to the GM and be like, I'm certainly always intrigued by that. You know that. I mean, that's my heart's there. It's I kind of try to treat myself here as the GM of the whole NFL working for NBC. So definite passion for that, but not going to leave where I am right now, the work I've done and everything just to go, oh, I got to go get in the front office somewhere, somehow, some way, right? And absolutely not, let alone me being a dad and being around my kids is very important to me. It really is. And that's why I got out of New England to begin with was I was like, damn, I'm never going to see my kids again. I can't take that.
Yeah.
My workout regimen, straight CrossFit right now. CrossFit Dang. Workouts with the family.
How many days a week?
I'm doing it twice a week because – every now and then a third day, but man, and when you're 43 and you do CrossFit, like it takes a few days to recover, right? And I'm like modified CrossFit. There's some exercises when they give us the workout and I go, I'm not doing that or my back's going to blow out.
Yeah.
Give me another exercise to substitute it, right?
So I get like, no, you do it. And you're like, I'm seriously not doing
that. No, I'm seriously not doing that. But I have a good trainer in that, you know, he's not trying to be Johnny Meathead. He knows I'm not trying to beat my personal best bench press or something like that. It's about being a champ, but doing it with my family.
So you, your son, your daughter, your wife?
And my wife's been doing
it.
Wow. Yeah, we've been doing the whole system
there. Is it just the Sims clan? Or are you in amongst other people too?
No, just the Sims clan. Wow. Yeah, yeah. So we've been having a lot of fun and, Yeah, doing like my daughter and my son versus me and my wife and like a workout and who can get done with it the quickest.
Are they enjoying it?
They are. They are. I love it. My daughter loves it. My son, I think, really likes it too because it's the first time he's ever like lifted weights a little, so he sees a little muscles in himself and he thinks he's buff now.
That's cool. You know, it's funny and you say that and it's like, The family life is something that you cannot have in the NFL.
You can't have it back either. That's
you can't
right.
have it back, right? You have a few more years with the kids there at home.
Right. Very special. One more year. My daughter's going to college next year. I'm going to be a mess this time of the year next year. I'm probably going to cry on the pod like multiple times going, I can't believe my daughter's going to college, right? My son's going to be going to high school in another 2 years. I don't want to miss that type of stuff. Yeah. I don't. You know, I know how quickly it all goes, how quickly life goes, and, you know, I want to be there. I don't want to be a 75-year-old man or an 85-year-old man on my deathbed going, gosh, I can't believe I didn't watch my kids grow up because I was working in the front office of some, you know, team and doing that. That to me was just too hard to stomach.
Yeah, I didn't see Phillip's senior year of high school, but I did scout that tight end at Middle Tennessee State.
right.
No one can ever take that away from me.
Right.
Jets free agents. Let's go into that. Yeah. Jets want some answers right now. New York Jets Flight Club says, what are your thoughts on the Jets' recent free agent moves? Tyron Smith, John Simpson, Javon Kinlaw, and now Mike Williams and others. How much of an impact does this make to the team, and does it move the needle for them in the AFC East?
It does, 100%. You know, I think myself included, this is where, you know, we were unfair to the Jets last year. Maybe even unfair to Nathaniel Hackett, where I wish I would have maybe defended him a little bit more through the year last year. I mean, come on. You know, a whole offseason, they have a whole offense and check package and, you know, 90 million things Aaron Rodgers can do that they formulated together at the line. They were going to do at the line of scrimmage, and Aaron Rodgers going to be able to do everything he's always wanted at the quarterback position. Four plays into the year, none of that. All that stuff you worked on from, you know, April to then, totally erased, back to the basics, back to the first few pages of the playbook for Zach Wilson, right? So that sucks. Right. Then you couple in the offensive line injuries and you go, well, yeah, how are they supposed to really have success last year? Right. You know, that's the big thing. So I don't know if they got a fair shake that way. But what I would say is, yes, like the O-line moves. First off, John Simpson, good player. Right. Trading for Morgan Moses. That wasn't in the question. That's another great move. Right. And then Tyron Smith is really good, too, along with Mike Williams at wide receiver. Now, the only thing with Tyron Smith and Mike Williams is just like, hey, and they got him for a low price, so it's not tremendous risk or stupidity or anything like that. Yeah. It's just, can they, you know, the health prognosis, right? Tyron Smith has been in and out of the lineup a ton the last few years with Dallas. Mike Williams is coming off an ACL injury, right? But they didn't overpay for those guys, and if they are healthy and going, they're big-time contributors. They are. And you got a guy like Garrett Wilson who can do it all, right? But now, hey, he can run his awesome routes. And like Rodgers has said, he's got a lot of Davante Adams in him. And you got a guy like Mike Williams now who's running the post over the top, the go route down the field. Rodgers can throw him back shoulders. Oh, he's covered, but he's still a big body. I can hit him on the slant route, right? You know, I think not only will Mike Williams, if healthy, will be a great help to their team, he's going to help out Alan Lazard too. Because now Lazard gets to be the number three instead of the number two, which he's not. And he can work the slot in the middle of the field, and I think it opens things up and makes them certainly more dangerous.
It gives him some flexibility on the field, also in the draft, and that is Jack Walker, 257's point. What direction should the Jets go with the number 10 pick in the draft? Seems like they can go a bunch of directions now with the acquisitions of Smith and Mike Williams.
I don't have the total draft, right, in my brain yet and like how it all gauges out. But like I look at it as far as like the value of players and positions, I mean, but I would still think tackle is part of this conversation here. Just because they signed Morgan Moses and Tyron Smith, they can't just be like, well, we're good. We got these two aging veterans who have been injured a bunch, but we're good. I would almost envision it. Yeah, they get the tackle. Not necessarily like, hey, he's depth and something for the future, right? But we're going to start Tyron Smith. And, man, if he gets hurt in week four, at least now we got a guy that we go, hey, he can do it, right?
Yeah.
So I still think I look at that to be the position of need. Defensively, I mean, there's nothing the Jets need on defense, really. There's nothing. I don't see a number 10 pick on defense where I go, ooh, that's something there. And then offensively, you know, again, I haven't got the tight ends. Is Brock Bowers worth the number 10 pick? I don't know. You got to be special to be worth that as a tight end for sure. You know, but offensively, they don't need much other than, you know, I think offensive linemen or a tackle for that matter.
They're at 10 overall. The Jets do not have a second round pick. They have a third round pick, and then they have a bunch, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh.
Hey, you go Morgan Moses, you know, John Simpson, Tippmann, Elijah Vera Tucker, Tyron Smith. I go, damn, that's a good offensive line right there.
They've restocked for sure on the offensive side of the ball. So of the Steelers,
yeah.
Kay Bannister, 96, what do you make of the Steelers' move so far? Really like the turnaround in the quarterback room, but it still feels like there are some big holes to fill. Corner, offensive line, wide receiver, all seem like areas that need attention.
Yeah, I would think that's fair, right? It's not a complete roster here. I mean, I think they still have to probably find another receiver at some point here. I think that would be the one thing you'd look at. You know, defensively, hey, the Patrick Queen thing, he's got Cam Hayward back. I think they got two young guys who, and Keanu Benton and Marvin Leal, right? The Texas A&M guy from 2 years ago, right? They got some guys come, Leal, yeah, right. Marvin Leal,
DeMarvin Leal.
Thank you very much. Right. I think they got something there, but yeah, I think again, they're another team where, I think offensive line certainly could be in the conversation. Would they go back-to-back years of first-rounders in the offensive line? I don't know about that.
Broderick Jones last year.
Yeah, who, like, really looked good. Like, really good. And let me just see. Where the Steelers right now are at pick 20. That could be Cornerville. That could be corner. Right, I think that you could see that. I don't think there's, from what I know so far, a linebacker or a safety that's in that range, right? I don't think they're going pass rusher, but, you know, corner, defensive lineman, maybe another offensive lineman to go forward here in the future. I'm trying to think off the top of my head right now as far as Steelers, you know, offensive tackles, right? I know you hit on the rookie from Georgia last year. I just want to make sure if there's nobody else I'm missing here. Right. Yeah, I know they got Dan Moore, right? I mean, yeah, I think we're on the right track. Yeah. I would expect it to be there. And again, again, 20, depending on who's there too and where they look at this, maybe receiver is something they look at. I don't think that's crazy to look at that and kind of stay ahead of the game at that position.
Yeah. Pete, I think what? We have time for a couple more here. I want to make sure I get my Detroit Lions question in here.
Oh, jeez.
So I'm prioritizing that. So let's do two more. You make your pick. Raiders, Rams, or Bills. Which team do you want to talk about the most out of those?
Gosh. I know. I'm trying to look at the questions here. You said Raiders,
Rams, or Bills. You get your choice. And everyone will know which team you prefer by this choice. The homies of the losing teams here will be saddened.
Raiders, Rams, or Bills?
We know you like the Bills, but that's okay. You don't like the Rams.
I'll go with the Rams or the Bills. Let's go.
Let's go Rams.
Okay.
Let's go Rams. The Lions West.
Yeah.
They have the number 19 overall pick. We'll get to those other questions at a later date, too. We'll weave those in, too, so don't worry about that. Mark Floyd, the Rams are road graders, and I love it. What position should we be looking for in the draft? I go back to the Sims Leftco days. Cheers. A homie from the beginning.
What up, dude?
Has persevered through all the incarnations since.
Can you believe that? Yeah, he's got to deal with me all those years. I think, you know, with the Rams, I don't know if there's going to be anything offensively we're looking at there as far as, you know, early in the draft. To me, the Rams feels like defense all the way, right? I think that's where I kind of look at it.
They helped themselves there last year.
Yeah, they did.
Kobe Turner.
Right. Byron Young, I like, no doubt about it, right? I think there's probably still some front seven that they could delve into. And I think maybe even corner could be another spot that they could delve into. I expect it to be defense, though. I think, you know, you look at the offense and go, wait, you got one of the best running backs in football. The O-line's really good. We got the quarterback, right? We got the tight end, who's pretty damn good. Right? He's coming off a little bit of an injury. I know that, right? And then you got Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua and – Tutu Atwell is still there, I believe, for another year, right?
Yep.
So I don't look at offensive being the need. Now it's about, and that wasn't their problem last year, right? I mean, again, they had to play your Lions team a little bit playing in a game, in the playoff game, where they were worried about their defense. And I think they had to change the way they even played on offense because they were worried about their defense not being able to stop the Lions, right? So that's an issue. I think it goes there.
Okay.
Like best defensive player available kind of thing at pick 20.
And we end with my Detroit Lions. I just love the fact that we can talk about the Lions and it's relevant to the NFL conversation.
It's beyond
I haven't had
relevant,
this in a
bro.
Long time.
You're beyond
they have
relevant.
The 29th pick, which is the one worst thing about being good. You don't get to pick in the top 10 anymore. Melchor 23. One, it is my contention that a high-level, big-body X receiver would complete the near-perfect archetype to Ahmed and my Lions offense. Who, in your opinion, could be there at the end of round one or trade up in round two that would complete this offense, strictly in terms of archetype?
Yeah. I mean, the offense is really got it all.
I mean, they've wanted Jameson Williams, and you believe in Jameson Williams, too,
To me, he's the thing, right? He's the guy that it's got to be this year. It's got to be it. Right. I see it there. I'm telling you. And again, I've been one that's in the past gone, ooh, I was wrong. I don't see it. It's not there. Right. It's there. And it really came on strong at the end of the year. It did. And it don't look at the stats, too. Right. There's still a number of plays where I go, Jared Goff's going to go back after the year and go, I should have thrown that to Jameson Williamson. I just didn't trust him all the way. Mm-hmm. Didn't have enough of a rapport. But I mean. You don't give up on a guy that's got four rockets up his ass and runs through the 49ers defense like nobody on the fucking team can even run in his stratosphere, right? So, and you got a Donovan Peoples-Jones that is the big body-ish type of guy that could catch some back shoulders and all that, right? So, you know, again, I'm not anti-receiver for the Lions there. And I like a lot of the things you've done on the defensive side of the ball.
So that's what, with Marcus Davenport at edge, DJ Reader, they got Carlton Davis at corner, he got Amik Robertson from
I like
the Raiders.
All of the, you know I like Amik Robertson. He's one of the most under-radar good secondary players in football.
I do think that they've given themselves the ability to take almost
like
best
be
overall.
Flexible.
I think so.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit. They're totally flexible there. They might go, ooh, wait, you know, here's an offensive lineman – you know, for 2 years from now, we don't know how much longer. You know, who's the damn big left tackle from Ohio State?
Taylor Decker.
Taylor Decker, right? Yeah. He's coming to the end. Let's look for a guy for next year. Maybe it's DJ Reader was what, only a 1 or 2 year deal, right?
2 years,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
So hey, we meet another guy inside, or is there a pass rusher? Again, you're a team that I certainly can look at and go, you know, Marcus Davenport's not the answer. You're not going to go, well, we got Davenport, guys.
That's
we're good.
Future, yeah.
Don't even worry about it, right? I mean, there's some unknowns there. So I could see pass rusher being a part of that equation as well.
You're right, offensive line.
Yeah.
Even though they got Kevin Zeitler, too, coming over.
Or a young secondary guy, a young corner, right? Where
I
you go, okay,
options.
We don't have to put him in there right now. And if he's so awesome, then we put him in. But if he's not, hey, we got Amik Robertson. We got Carlton Davis. We'll be okay. We don't have to do it right now.
I think that, you know? From what I can tell, that was the strategy, right? You don't want to go into a draft with the 29th overall pick needing something.
Need. Yeah. Right, no
like
doubt
hoping
about it.
Someone falls, trading up for someone, even though
that's
the value's
right.
not there. And so they can just wait. And see who falls to them at
that's
29,
right.
or maybe even trade back from 29.
No, I think they.
If there's no one they love.
They. I think they played it exactly right. They addressed needs with good value. Don't have to overspend it. We know this guy, and we think he can fit. But Amik Robinson's got a little of that C.J. Gardner-Johnson attitude.
Yeah, he's fun
by
to
your
watch.
Kneecaps. Carlton Davis might not have that gregarious personality in the same way, but he plays, I'll get in your face and play you man-to-man every play, which they're going to like that too. And they haven't had that there. So that's good. But, yeah, I guess when we really talk about it, yeah, they have a lot of – leeway here,
yeah,
but I still think edge on the defensive side of the ball is probably the one I look at to be the most desperate, let's say.
That would take him from here to here, right? You have Aiden Hutchinson, you pair him up with another beast on the other edge,
right? And
like,
then you got the guys inside working, and
makes life easier for your secondary all of a sudden.
Definitely.
So that's not as much of a
exactly
weakness.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree with you there. We should have started with that. We will next time.
You feel better?
That's it. We got a lot of questions in
we
there
did.
From
that
the homies.
That was a great day.
That
I
was
love
a good
it.
Day.
I know we didn't get them all, and don't worry, we're going to try to. Right? This is not going to be our last Ask Me Anything of this whole draft process. Pete saved them all. He told me in my ear. So, and continue. Again, you know we're going to continue to expand this whole conversation, and especially next weekend with the DBs, which I think is going to be some really good conversations. I do.
Yeah.
You know, I see some guys there that I go, wow, and there's some overrated guys, and there's some guys that are under the radar where I go, wow. So you better watch out. It'll be fun. But I think thanks for everybody for the participation, sending in questions. Ahmed, thanks for always directing the traffic, okay, and being so smooth. You the man.
You're the man.
I'm glad you're not sweating through your pits as much.
It's
because
amazing.
You're not a lack
it
of energy
drink. Energy drinks. You might be right.
I think I might be right.
That's
I'm on
crazy.
To something. Accidental scholar is what I'm called. Accidental scholar. All right, everybody. Be good. Enjoy the rest of your week. Be safe this weekend. We'll talk to you Monday. Clap it up.
Clap it up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.